Chapter 18. The Spear. The first time I saw the Canticle City was the night we darkened its skies. Many of the Nine Legions' warbands speak of that battle as though they had been there, telling how they fought valiantly despite being unprepared to face a numerically superior foe. They use it to cast aspersion on us, as though we might be needled by their implications that we lack a sense of honor. Some of the tales even swear that we wore black in that battle, as though we were already the Black Legion in name as well as heart. Lies, all of them. When other warbands speak such things, they are greasing their tongues with untruths born of pride and envy. Many warlords wish the right to claim they were present at one of the Nine Legions' most defining battles, and those who were truly there hunt for any reason to excuse their defeat. Yet the stories remain, casting a jealous shadow over the Black Legion's genesis. Brute force, our rivals insist, carried the day. What finer way to justify their failure than to pretend defeat was inevitable? Quick, savage, clean. That was how it played out. For all the vengeful spirit's strength, only a handful of warriors populated its halls. Even in orbit, our enemies outnumbered us 20-1. How then did we win? The answer is simple. We won through the assault's audacity and through loyalty to one another. We won by going for the throat. The world was called Harmony. Whether that was a corruption of the original Eldar name or merely a delusion of Third Legion vanity remains a mystery to me even now. Despite the breaking of the Emperor's children at Scalathrax, the Canticle City served as a haven to many Third Legion warbands and their allies. A populated world with ore-rich moons, claimed in turn by feuding Mechanicum city-states. The system was no more peaceful than anywhere else in the Eye. Dozens of warbands called it home. All we knew of the cityscape came from Telemachon's description. We possessed no tactical hololiths, nor any current disposition of its defences. One of my last clear memories before the journey was of my newly freed brother in his silver mask, shaking his head in answer to one of Abaddon's many questions.
Teleportation is as unreliable there as anywhere else in the Eye.
That fact surprised no one.
Planetary assault will only be possible with drop pods.
Abaddon had shaken his head.
That won't be necessary. We'll win this fight without setting foot on the world itself.
I remember precious little of the journey to Harmony. I had a heavy duty at Abaddon's request, with no attention free to spare for anything else. I began my task before the Anamnesis's cognition engines were fully installed aboard the Vengeful Spirit, and Abaddon was at least sensitive to the fact he was consigning me to this difficult duty without even knowing Itsara's fate.
"You will see her once we reach the Canticle City," he promised me. "She will triumph and rule, or she will be subsumed and serve. But one way or another, you will see her when you awaken."
His words were scarce reassurance. Nevertheless, I committed myself to the task he wished of me. I knelt in the center of the strategium, reaching out with my senses night after night and day after day. Every iota of my focus was devoted to clinging on to a cold presence outside the ship, holding it in my psychic clutch, and dragging it with us through the Eye's unquiet tides. Imagine hauling a corpse across an ocean of thick fluid. Imagine that grueling swim with a tired grip that threatens to come loose with only a heartbeat's distraction. That was my task. As the vengeful spirit sailed, I pulled a monumental dead weight in our wake. I was scarcely even aware of the passing of time. My brothers told me later that our passage was a matter of several months' sailing. yet I recall nothing more than the migraine smear of unclear vision and the endless whispers of the damned and the neverborn. Time ceased to have any meaning. Sometimes it felt as though I had only just bent to my task. Other times I struggled to remember anything of my life beyond the absolute focus necessary to do what Abaddon had asked of me. I remember sweating with the effort it demanded of me. Effort and little else. In that regard, the erosion of my memory is a mercy. I did nothing but concentrate, sweat, curse, and ache for several months. It was Nefertari who fed me nutrient pastes and brought water to my lips. It was my blood ward who massaged and worked my muscles, preventing cramps and ensuring I did not waste away. I never thanked her, for I never knew she was there. She and Gaia watched over me in my meditative kneel, the alien leaving only to rest in her eyrie, and the wolf never leaving my side at all. I had restored Telemachon before undertaking my duty. The swordsman would confess to me later that he came to stare at me many times during the journey, considering whether to strike or stay his hand. He made his resistance sound like he was granting me mercy, but I am not a fool. He feared Gaia and Nefertari then, just as he always has since. To act against me would invite destruction at their claws. I sensed none of this tension at the time. There I knelt, silent and lost in focus, pulling an infinite weight of cold steel and dead iron through the void behind us. Eventually there was a voice. It was a deep, guttural tone, penetrating the seething pressure of my concentration. It spoke my name. Gaion. I felt a hand on my shoulder, a fraternal touch, firm and grateful. It brought me back to myself slowly, so very slowly. The bright lights of the vengeful spirit's cavernous bridge were acid in my eyes. Sound returned to me in a rush of chattering servitors and shouting crew. It took almost a full minute for me to be able to see the oculus screen, where a beautiful planet of red earth and black seas turned before us. Its lone landmass bore a single great man-made scab visible from orbit, the black and grey of what could only be the Canticle City.
Water.
The word was a dry croak from my parched throat.
Water.
Nefertari brought water to my lips in a tin cup. The metallic flavor of filtration chemicals and old mold coursed across my tongue in a cooling rush. Never had I tasted anything so sweet. Reality returned to my strained senses little by little. The ship was shaking around me. I had awoken while the battle was underway.
It's Zara, I asked my blood ward. The machine spirit.
I could barely speak. My desiccated throat refused to open.
Is she... She lives.
Nefertari pressed cold fingertips to my forehead. Her skin was flushed with the health of a recent feeding, and her black hair was a hand's breadth longer than it had been before I entered my trance. Months had passed. I was having trouble processing that fact.
She won. She lives, the Eldar repeated. Kion.
Abaddon's presence restored my scattered thoughts. He stood nearby, the past come to life at my side. Gone was the patchwork armor of the pilgrim in hell, replaced by the pitted and cracked suit of warplate cast in Justerin black. He was armed with a plain power sword and nothing more. I expected his hair to be lifted back and worked into its ornate tribal topknot, but it remained in a filthy, snarled fall against his features.
Are you ready, my brother?
I was not sure of the answer to that question. Sluggishness reigned. The interior clockwork of my mind felt thick with rancid oil. I forced my stinging eyes to seek out the oculus. Everything was happening too quickly for me to keep pace. Orders were spoken in languages I understood, yet still their meaning was lost on me. A fleet ringed us, chased us, sought to block us. Escort frigates, tearing ahead of their parent cruisers in eager attack runs. Weapons fire hammered uselessly against the vengeful spirits' inviolate shields. I saw T'Jacques performing his overseer duties aboard this new command deck. The Talok's crew of thralls and slaves called out reports and manned their stations with a sense of controlled, ordered urgency. I sensed their razor eagerness, their hunger, and felt the air around them thicken with their ripening auras. Experience calmed them where they might otherwise have panicked. All were working, calling out reports, doing what they were told and what they were trained to do.
Altio, Abaddon called across the bridge. Speak.
Void shields holding,
came the voice of the Amanesis, echoing across the cavernous chamber.
Be ready. We're about to cast the spear.
Abaddon,
she snapped back, her voice not just charged with emotion, but saturated with it. She sounded eager to the point of laughter.
Let me kill them. Let me tear the iron from their ship's bones and strangle them in the cold of the void.
Soon, Altio, soon.
Affection colored his voice. Affection for her murderous replies, perhaps.
Keep the shields high as we move into low orbit. Run out the guns.
I comply.
As she agreed to his order, that is when I saw her. The Anamnesis was not locked away and sealed behind guarded doors down in the heart of the ship, as she had been on the Talok. Her containment tank stood at the heart of the Strategium, offering her an unparalleled view of the bridge and its crew. The secondary cognition pods storing her vast intellect were affixed across the command deck's walls and scattered over the ceiling like a hive of rattling, clanking beetles. Many of them had replaced the banners of old wars hanging from the rafters before the vengeful spirit's reactivation. From the central dais, where Horus Lupercal had once held court, the Anamnesis floated in her armored life support shell, predatory emotion making her features twist into a snarl. Her fingers curled in the cold aqua vitrilio in response to the bloodlust I could sense emanating from her. She looked more alive than I had seen her in the decades since her entombing. Not human, not with that feral expression of violent hunger, but definitely alive. What had changed within her once she bonded with the machine spirit of this empress among battleships? Altio, Abaddon had called her, the high Gothic word for revenge.
Anamnesis, I pulsed to her.
My thought voice was sluggish from disuse.
Kion,
she sent back across the bond. I sensed her distraction, just as I sensed her thoughts were turned entirely towards the pleasure of hunting lesser prey.
Vermin crawl across my skin, pricking at my flesh with little scratches of plasma and laser.
I've never heard you speak like this. Who are you? The answer came in a sensory flood of identity.
I am the Amanesis. I am Itzara Kion, sister to Iskandar Kion. I am the vengeful spirit. I am Altio.
Relief clashed hot with urgent confusion. I burned to ask her 100 questions, but there was no time, no time at all.
Now, my brother, Abaddon said, throw the spear.
The spear. My duty. I mustered my strength one last time on the immense weight out there in the void. First, I raked back the concealing shroud of Etheria hiding the spear from sight. The enemy fleet immediately turned their guns upon it.
Faster, Kion, faster!
You are not helping.
Launch the spear!
I wrapped it with a strangling grip, feeling every cold contour with the touch of my mind. And then, with every iota of concentration I possessed, I hurled the spear at the world called Harmony. Blackness closed around me in that moment. My senses deserted me. My memory fled with them. The others have since told me that I rose to my feet, hands curled into claws as I screamed at the city I was about to kill. I cannot say if that is true, for I remember nothing but exultant, dizzying relief when the spear left my psychic hold. Sometimes you are most aware of a burden when it finally leaves your back. The vengeful spirit shivered in sympathy with the anamnesis in her life pod. Reality coalesced around me in time to watch the spear cut through the enemy fleet, too fast for their ponderous guns to follow, and catch fire in Harmony's atmosphere. Abaddon remained at my side, helping me to my feet. Nausea racked me beyond what my enhanced physiology could tolerate. Queasy with weakness in the wake of my psychic efforts, I watched as Abaddon's gambit played out before our eyes. The Canticle City was prepared to repel assaults, with its skyline of armored bastions aiming defense turrets and flak cannons towards the heavens. But while fighting back an invasion is one thing, resisting a cataclysm is another. Even in my weakened state, I could not resist watching the spear fall, seeing it through the thoughts of the doom souls on the surface. Daylight died above the Canticle City. Through the wide upturned eyes of worker menials, pleasure slaves, and Third Legion warriors, I saw the gun battlements light up in helpless rage as a shadow grew in place of the sun. The shrieking hymns broadcast from Vox Towers were drowned out by the metal hammering of defense batteries lighting up the darkening sky. The black shape that swallowed the sun burned as it fell, first aflame with atmospheric entry, then on fire from the rage of the Canticle City's guns. A crack of thunder split the sky as the falling spear broke the sound barrier. It was no longer falling straight. It rolled as it plummeted, its hull streaming black smoke and its spinal battlements screaming with fire. Less than a minute passed from the moment it entered Harmony's atmosphere to the second it struck the ground. Long enough to let the population see death falling towards them. Not long enough to do anything about it. It smashed into the earth with the force of the war god's axe. Every eye I had been looking through suddenly went blind. Every sense I had been sharing went dark and cold. From orbit, all we could see was the spreading blackness of choking smoke blooming over the city. Our sensors recorded tectonic unrest grave enough to send tremors rippling across the other side of the world. Harmony itself was heaving with torment. When I think of that night now, I still feel the sense of loss that followed the spear's fall. The Talok was almost 2 kilometers and 8 megatons of ancient ironclad anger. Once it had sailed the stars in the name of the 15th Legion, crewed by 25,000 loyal souls. I had dragged its empty corpse across the Eye of Terror, just as Abaddon had asked of me. And then I had hurled it right into the heart of the 3rd Legion's fortress. On the Vengeful Spirit's bridge, a cheer rose from 1,000 throats, almost deafening to my recovering senses. I had risked my sister and sacrificed my ship. Now they were all cheering. I thought for a moment that I had gone mad.
"That's for Lupercalios!"
Falcus crashed both of his thunder hammers together in triumph.
"May you all choke on the ashes!"
Abaddon turned from the smoky devastation clouding across the oculus. His quiet words carried in the wake of the cheering, becoming a breath of calm after the hurricane of sound.
"Ultio, take us back up into high orbit."
"I comply."
"The rats are about to flee the sinking ship. Let's break their backs as they run."
The ship shook as its engines roared louder, hotter. The anamnesis moved in mimicry, drifting higher in her tank with her teeth clenched tight, willing the ship to rise with her. I could still barely believe what I was seeing. Her presence here before so many souls, her vitality in form and speech.
"Kion, Telemachon. Get to the boarding pods.
I heard Abaddon's words, but made no move to obey him. There was too much to take in aboard the bridge. Mounted high above the tiered deck, the oculus showed 30 external views of the vengeful spirit's hull, each from a unique angle. Our void shields were flaring in kaleidoscopic ripples under the ineffective fire of the enemy fleet.
They're beginning to annoy me, Ultio,
Abaddon observed with a distracted air.
Start killing them.
I comply.
Standing aboard a Gloriana-class battleship when it opens fire is an experience like no other. Mankind's entire sphere of interstellar ingenuity is manifest in the brutal hammering to your hearing and your balance. No dampeners can mask the unbelievable cannonade of a city's worth of guns bellowing their payloads into the black. No gravitic stabilizers can wholly hide the thunder that shakes through the vessel's metal bones. Runes began to flash out of existence on the flickering tactical hololith, projected in the air above the menial crew stations. Sweeping views on the ocular showed frigates and destroyers reduced to burning hulks, tumbling into Harmony's atmosphere. The Anamnesis screamed with every barrage. Each volley from her guns earned another cry across the bridge vox. I could not tell which was coming first, her cries or the cannon fire. The two were indivisible. Her hands were curled into talons as she stared out from her tank. I doubted she was seeing any of us now. Her vision was bound into the ship's scanning systems. She was seeing the void and the vessels she slaughtered with every twitch of her fingers. But we were not invulnerable. Pockmarks cratered across the void shields, which became tears and in turn became gaping wounds. Enemy cruisers circled us, running a beam and risking a volley from our broadsides for long enough to let fly with their own. More prudent, or perhaps more cowardly, warships hung back and cut us from a distance with their long-range lances. I sensed the Anamnesis's frustration, evident in a pressing tide from her changed aura. She wanted to come about and pursue the vermin that scratched at her, burning her iron skin from afar.
Keep the prow towards the wreckage of the city, Abaddon ordered.
He was speaking to the Anamnesis more than the packs of mutants serving as helm crew. There seemed to be less symbiosis in her bond with the new ship's crew. The Anamnesis seemed to rely much less on their clawed hands by the helm's controls.
I comply.
Her voice was stern over the speakers, irritated from a pleasure denied. I could not resist reaching out with my senses again, seeking to ride the minds of anything still conscious on the surface. The scene I found was revelatory. The heart of the vastness that had been the Canticle City simply did not exist anymore. A screaming maelstrom of liquid fire and violence had torn out in all directions from the Talok's impact site. Everything, everywhere, was dust, ashes, and flame. The fall of a single rockcrete skyscraper can choke a moderately sized city with its dust cloud. Try to imagine, then, the effect of the vastness of an entire city slain by a 2-kilometer-long warship hurled from orbit and bearing thousands of tons of volatile chemicals and tactical warheads right into the city's heart. I'd be surprised if you can. The scalding air was thick enough to drown in. Where once the Canticle City had been renowned throughout ice space for the shrieking hymns it broadcast above its towering skyline, screams of torturous ecstasy from the Third Legion's countless victims, that skyline simply didn't exist anymore. The only song to be heard now was the deafening rumble of the heaving earth, groaning in tectonic unrest outwards from the colossal crater, in which had been the city's political and strategic center. Dust, ash, and superheated steam was already thrusting skywards and beginning its inevitable spread across the continent. The wound I had dealt Harmony cast a shadow similar to that caused by the meteorite that extinguished the saurian reptiles of ancient Earth
after their uninterrupted reign of thousands of millennia. Yet horrific though this physical damage undoubtedly was, worse by far was the metaphysical trauma I had wrought upon the planet that day. In destroying Harmony's population, I had given rise to thousands of demons, born in their last moments of helpless terror and searing pain. And it was through the perceptions of these malign entities that I was able to stalk the slag and rubble that was once the Canticle City. All around me I could sense things of raw emotion and violated spirit, creatures of suffering, terror, and melancholic delight. Silhouettes drifted through the murk around me. Most were too malformed to be even notionally human. Some seemed to stagger as they ghosted past, perhaps glutted on the horror that birthed them. Most others were hunched over, grit and pebbles clattering against their armored hides in a torrential downpour as they devoured the charred remains of the dead city's millions of slaves, servants, allies, and lords, and drank their still shrieking souls. It was as if a monumental boil had been lanced, and now the corruption was running free across the abused earth. It was Abaddon's voice that brought me back to myself once more.
How does it feel to kill a world with one blow, my brother?
I managed a weak smile. Exhausting. His golden eyes seemed to swallow light. Stars die that way, eating the illumination they once gave the galaxy.
Get to the boarding pod, Skion. It's almost time.
I still did not obey. The first ships were rising from the surface now. They came without formation or order, fleeing their doomed planet. I lingered on the bridge as we opened fire on them, sending some back to the ground in flames, letting others pass untouched. If there was reason or rhyme in which targets felt the lash of our guns, it was a pattern beyond my understanding. Abaddon either sensed or guessed my slow thoughts, answering them by nodding over at the Anamnesis in her place of authority and honor.
I am letting her slip the leash, he explained, letting our void goddess kill as she chooses. See how she thrives.
Unrestrained, and with the Gloriana's guns obeying her every breath, the Anamnesis had a murderous poise she had lacked as the sole core of the Talok. She was the warship itself, the vengeful spirit personified, and it showed in every taut muscle and swipe of her hands raking through the aqua vitrilio. She had not been subsumed by the flagship's machine spirit. She had taken its arrogant brutality into herself. Abaddon was right. She thrived. She was merciless with the enemy refugee ships, ripping them open with kill shots from the prow lances again and again and again, far beyond the mathematical precision necessary to simply cripple or destroy them. She ravaged them. She gorged on them. Abaddon allowed it, encouraged it. I had not seen Sargon. He emerged almost as if from Abaddon's shadow, aiming his war maul at the oculus. His youthful features remained perfectly placid even here, where countless others among the crew were resorting to shouting above the din. Sargon, as ever, was the calm at the heart of the storm. It would be a tendency I would remark upon many times in the future. Abaddon took note of the word-bearer's gesture and nodded. He mirrored it, aiming his plain soldier's sword at the oculus, marking out one ship among a fleeing pack.
There.
In tune with his choice, the ship's rune began to throb a dull red in the tactical hololith. I read the spill of data as our Auspex scanners latched on to this new prey. The Pulchritudinous. Lunar-class cruiser. Halcyon variant hull. Third Legion. Born of the orbital docks above Sacred Mars.
Let the others run, Abaddon ordered.
The Anamnesis whirled in her tank, hands still curled into claws.
But...
Let them run, Abaddon repeated. You've toyed with your prey, Ultio. Focus on the Pulchritudinous. She's the reason we're here.
I can kill her.
Malevolence flavored the tones of this new anamnesis.
I can send her to the ground, torn open and aflame.
You have your orders, Altio.
It looked as though she would resist, choosing to sate her own battle lust instead of obeying her new commander. But she relented. Her muscles loosened as she exhaled a vocalized breath across the bridge speakers.
I comply.
Chase Vector calculated. As the crew worked to make those orders a reality, Abaddon turned to me once more.
It's time, Kaon. I need you ready if this has any hope of working.
For the first time in recent memory, I saluted a superior officer, fist thudding against my heart. In the many thousands of years I have lived and fought and survived the wars that rage across our galaxy, I have long become accustomed to the dispassion of battle. Battle might stir the blood, especially when you face a hated foe, but a rush of adrenaline is not the same as chaotic passion. Emotion is acceptable. A lack of control is not. One of the greatest strengths of the Black Legion is that war holds no mystique to us. We fight because we have something worth fighting for, not because we strive in fevered contest for the promise of intangible glory beneath the eyes of the gods. War is mundane to us. It is work. We have stripped it down to its bones, revealing it as nothing to fear and nothing to celebrate. It is simply our task, and one we must carry out with savage, veteran focus. The Black Legion's martial virtues are not measured in how many skulls we take or how many worlds tremble at our name. Our pride lies in cold-blooded concentration in ruthless efficiency, in winning every battle we can, no matter the cost. Moments of individual triumph and hot-blooded glory still exist. We are still post-human warriors, and thus slave to the vestiges of human emotion we carry, but they are secondary to the Legion's aims. It is not about sacrificing emotion and vitality, but about harnessing them to a greater end. The Legion is all. What matters is winning. Through such loyalty and unity, we do the work of our Legion and the work of the War Master, not the work of the Pantheon. And after the battle, let the four gods empower whomever they so choose. Let the Imperium demonize whomever among us that it wishes to curse. These concerns are for lesser men. At least such is our ideal. I would be lying if I claimed every Black Legion warlord was above such things. Like any faction or conquering force, we have a standard that not every soul is able to live up to. The Isakarian fell short at times. I have taken the skulls from hard-fought battles more than once, or lost all pretense of patience and shouted my name and titles into the faces of cowering foes. Even Abaddon has lapsed from the path over the course of the millennia. Revelation, as he is so fond of saying, is a process. The taking of the Pulchritudinous shaped us even before we formally wore the Legion's black. Abaddon spat on any notion of glory or renown. He struck with overwhelming force to achieve a single goal. No lingering in the skies above Harmony, cutting the enemy fleet into scrap and pounding every city into dust. No opening threats across the Vox demanding the surrender and submission of a weaker foe. He cast the enemy into disarray, then went for the throat. Victory, above all else. It had been so long since I fought for something other than survival. That, more than anything else, lingers in my mind from that day. I had brothers again. We had orders and a plan of attack. We had a shared purpose. Of the battle itself, I will tell you this. It was blunt in its simplicity, though more ferocious than any of us had expected. Boarding actions are always savage affairs. One side fights with its back to the corner. The other fights almost wholly cut off from reinforcement. Some of the worst depredations of warfare I have ever seen have taken place in boarding engagements.
Barely recovered from my trance, weakened from the release of psychic forces, and still with scarcely any idea of what the last few months had done to the anamnesis, I made my way to the boarding pod cradles, ordering a squad of Rubrikai to stay at my side. Telemachon, Nefertari, and Gaia were waiting for me. My place was with them in the first wave. There is little joy for me in what followed. Lies will serve no one at this late hour, and I have promised to speak the truth, so that is what I will do. Here, then, is the truth. Here is how the Black Legion was born, baptized in blood, at a cost I could never forgive.